Bob, I think it's a combination of things, and certainly the ambassador role that the Secretary of State plays across the state is important. And when you talk about economic development, you really can't talk about it unless you also talk about your communities and having the proper infrastructure and being what we call business ready. Because, you know, I'm one of the five that sit on the State Loan and Investment Board. And as part of our agenda, we work with Wyoming Business Council, for example, when we're talking about grants and loans to cities, towns, and counties to develop their infrastructure. So that's an important piece of economic development. Speaking to the regulations, I think our regulations right now with regard to forming business entities are very streamlined. Since I've been in office, I've really been surprised by the outreach from folks who have come to Wyoming from other places to start businesses or who had dealings with our office from other places. And I can, two of them come to mind immediately, and they were just astounded how customer friendly Wyoming is, how easy it is to start a business in Wyoming, and how helpful the office is for them in starting a business. And so I think our regulations are in the right place. One of the fun things we've done since I've been in office is to help economic development is we kicked off our Wyoming Invest Now program, which is WIN for short. And that's a really neat deal. And then you talk about regulation, it's the least amount of government regulation that you can imagine that tries to take the crowdfunding concept and kind of get small business investors, capital investors, partnered up with small business owners to help finance new startups, small businesses across the state of Wyoming. And we were able to, a couple sessions ago, get a law passed that basically exempts us from federal regulation through the Securities and Exchange Commission, and it left it with our office to have some rules and regulations around the WIN program. And basically what it is we have disclaimers that we give out to people that say, you know, you're investing at your own risk, but beyond that, we're just being a facilitator to put private investors with private companies, hoping that those small businesses can find another source of capital to be successful.
Can I turn your attention to blockchain, talking about economic development, and how active have you been involved with that? And sort of what do you see? How do you see the Secretary of State moving forward as we get some of these businesses maybe ready to go?
You know, we have worked with the legislature in a couple of different areas with regard to, say, series LLCs, also initial coin offerings, and also the blockchain technology. I will tell you that it's exciting, it's mysterious, and it's in its infancy. And so, yes, just yesterday I had a meeting with the blockchain task force, and one of the things that we were talking about doing, and it'll be a topic for the upcoming legislative session, is kind of testing out blockchain technology in registering businesses here in Wyoming. The idea on a 30,000 foot view is to speed up transactions so that you not only have more businesses filing to do business in the state of Wyoming, but you're also completing their transactions that much more quickly, the idea being that you'll promote business and economic development.
Are you satisfied that you have the laws in place to kind of regulate these shell companies in the state? I mean, it just seems like every two or three years we have a big story. I'm getting called by NPR to do a story on our shell companies here. How comfortable are you that you kind of know what people are up to and that we have a pretty good handle on what's happening here?
I'd say we're more comfortable than we've ever been, as you know, in covering the legislature. And even while I was there, we revamped a lot of our business and corporation laws, for example, to require registered agents to have a physical address and to maintain certain records so that we know where the registered agents are for these businesses. And we can conduct audits as necessary. I would say you're always going to have some bad actors, but the system we have in place gives us, really a lot of peace and a lot of comfort in knowing that when those things pop up, we know where to go looking. We just had a case a couple of months ago where an individual was getting fraudulent charges on their credit card from an entity, and because of those new laws surrounding registered agents, we were able to immediately go track it down, do an audit the same day, and got it shut down probably within about 72 hours. And the lesson here is that you're always going to have bad actors. You're always going to have people attempting to undertake fraudulent activity. But the key is how quickly can you respond to it and get it shut down, and I feel very comfortable with that. We were just talking yesterday again at the Blockchain Task Force about the new Series LLCs legislation that went through, and we had a very in-depth discussion on making sure that this legislation will allow us to track the smaller LLCs under the originating LLC, and that was the very discussion we had, Bob, which was, okay, how are we going to find these little entities under the mother entity? We need to have some way to track them. And we came up with kind of a user ID system whereby we're going to be able to track them. And we were adamant about that, and I think the legislature certainly agrees with that approach.
All right, last series question is going to be on elections, and I know the one, I've read some of your comments on this one already, but obviously during the primary, lots of concern came up about the people like me who switch their voting all the time or at least look to get the most exciting primary in their community. It sounds like you're open to maybe changing the way we do things here. Could you talk maybe a little bit about your thoughts on that?
Sure. You know, I've been approached already by legislators from both parties that are going to have suggestions in the upcoming legislative session to make some changes that involve, perhaps a hybrid type system, perhaps like an open primary where, you can vote for anybody and then you have a runoff if the margins are close enough to warrant a runoff to get your top two candidates. In fact, on my desk, I've got a folder full of old bills that have been sponsored in the past, as well as ideas that I've jotted down from, like I said, the calls I've received from legislators from both parties. And so, my approach is let's take a look at this because it doesn't really seem like anybody's happy with the current system. And maybe there's a way, if the legislature sees fit and folks want to see a change where you change things up a little bit and have a different way of doing things, so the crossover issue isn't really an issue anymore that's detrimental to one party over the other.
How do you do a runoff situation with the time frame that we have so you don't have county clerks killing you at some point and wanting to and maybe worried about expense and that kind of thing?
Yeah, and that is an issue. I appeared at Corporations Committee, and I floated the idea of, and this was just an idea, I wanted them to think about it, moving back the application for nomination process to earlier in the year. And my originating thought for that actually was to give us more time to look at issues that arise with regard to candidate eligibility prior to ballots being printed and early voting starting. That was the original premise of that, but as it moved along, it also would give us a greater window to look at perhaps moving up a primary election so that you could, wouldn't push the election season still beyond, early November. The issue as far as cost is concerned, that's really, again, something that's going to be up to the legislature. And you've got a lot of things we're going to be talking about with regard to elections that, we're going to have to be careful because there's going to be costs associated with it. We're looking at replacing the old voting equipment to bring it up to the most recent technological standards, for the 2020 election. So, all of these conversations work hand in hand going forward.
Are you on board with it? I hear people all the time bring up they come from another state and they liked how they could do mail-in ballots and even do some things online. Are you on board with any of those tweaks?
At this point in time, I am not. I say that for two reasons when it comes to mail-in ballots. Number one, as I read the Wyoming Constitution, believe it or not, it spells out how ballots are delivered, and only with regard to like our overseas folks, like citizens that are living overseas, military members, and special elections, does it really speak to some type of mail-in ballots. And so, number one, I think it would require a constitutional change, so a joint resolution through the legislature would have to be passed by the public first. That's number one. And then two, it's the fraud issue. Everybody says, I want fraud-free elections. I want them to be secure and fair. And that's a balancing act. And I think the further you get away from in-person voting, the more you invite potential fraud. Now, that's not to say that steps can't be taken to prevent it under a mail-in ballot system, but I'll tell you that the equipment necessary to prevent that potential fraud that comes with mail-in ballots is an added expense to the state at a time when we have a lot of budget challenges going on. So I'm not against mail-in ballots just for being against them. It's because I think some steps need to be taken to really examine the process to make sure it's a good fit for Wyoming, given our population and given the expense.
You already brought up the issue, but I'll take you back there. We don't need to name names unless you want to, but you have a situation where you had a candidate. There was some dispute over where the candidate lived and whether or not the candidate was eligible. And it struck me as very odd that we couldn't address this early, especially if a county clerk or someone maybe identified a potential problem there. What can we do to maybe work on that as we go forward?
Well, again, Bob, that was the genesis of when I appeared before the Corporations Committee in September, was to say, hey, let's move up our application for nomination process, number one. Two, let's take that form. And because, that constitutional provision was unique to gubernatorial elections, let's have those folks who are going to run for governor list under oath their residences for the last, the preceding 5 years, so that we can pretty much easily tell right away if there's an issue. And if you back it up a little bit, we have time to deal with it. One of the issues is you come straight out of June 1st was the end date for the application process. You had early voting starting July 6th. So ballots were printed, in the middle of June sometime. And by the time that particular complaint got to us, it was the end of June. And ballots are already printed. And so potential damage is already done, because it would be it's impossible, it's impractical to expense and otherwise, you know, print new ballots, especially when you don't really know the answer to the eligibility question in the first place. So I felt like if we changed our forms a little bit, required a little bit more information, and backed up the process a little bit more so that we have time to deal with these issues, I think it would go a long way towards alleviating these types of situations, just because we'd have the time to deal with it. I would add, while we're on the topic, you know, it's amazing to me how convoluted that whole story has become regarding that issue. You know, the legislature passed a law just this last year that gave us direction as to what to do with those complaints. And I see my name associated with that case quite a bit. That came to our office, and we simply followed the law, which was to turn it over to the Attorney General's office. The Secretary of State's office, me as an individual, never made any eligibility determination as to regard to the candidate, and had nothing to do with, you know, it really after it was given to the Attorney General. And then it was recently dismissed, and I would have liked to have seen some court decision so we'd have some precedence, court precedence, if it happened in the future. But as was explained to me by the Attorney General's office, you know, it's a moot point. It's a moot point, and the court's not going to hear a case wherein they can't grant any relief, because it's moot. The election's over. No other candidates are affected. That particular candidate's not affected. And because the residency issue is a look back 5 year, it was only really pertinent to this election. Going forward, it's not an issue. So I just wanted to make that clear, because my name gets ascribed to that process a lot, and I think it's caused a little bit of consternation on the parts of a lot of people. But you know, I have no statutory authority to take an individual off the ballot, and it looks like the Attorney General wanted to resolve that issue as well as the residency issue.
So it's
after I turned it over to the Attorney General, that was my last part in that whole deal.
So it does sound like that whole process needs to be revisited. And are you hoping that they might be able to do that this coming year?
Well, you know, the Corporations Committee's plate was rather full, and I will tell you, I don't think they're going to take it up this year, which I guess, you know, in theory, if you're talking about that unique issue that came up in a gubernatorial race, you know, we've got until 2022 to, you know, to figure that one out. So maybe they'll take it up in subsequent years. I will tell you, you know, the election code is from 1973, and there have been some small changes to it over the years. But just in this primary election cycle, I've written down lots of things that I'd like to see changed. And I gave a list of those things to the Corporations Committee in September, and I'm hoping they take it up, if not this session, in the interim between now and 2020.
Oh, so I'm right and accurate. When are you proposing that we would you'd file to run for office?
You know, there's not a hard date. We were looking at obviously it surrounds the legislative session quite a bit, and I think a lot of legislators like to look at that and say, well, am I going to run again? And I just got done with the session, and they probably want to have a little break. You know, in the general sessions, those usually end in the first couple weeks of March. And so we were looking at, you know, maybe a March 15th or an April 1st or something like that, and giving us an extra 30 days, which is really huge when you're talking about such a short primary season.
Okay.